Talk today for Wednesday, September 5th, 2018, New Comic Book Day! Man, I'm excited. I'm about to go to the comic shop and get some actual physical books. I know I've been talking about this. I'll talk about it on some other episode. On this episode of the podcast, I have a special guest. And I know, normally I do guests on Thursdays, but I got really excited that I finally got a chance to hang out and talk to a friend of the show, Dinesh Sandasani. Of course, many of you might know him as the ex-CEO slash COO of Valiant Entertainment, one of my favorite all-time publishers. And I hadn't talked to Dinesh in quite a while, so it was nice to catch up with him. And I know I promised originally that we wouldn't talk about Valiant, but we actually do end up talking quite a bit about Valiant. And he brought it up, so it wasn't me. Can't blame me for it. We, of course, talk about, he's filming right now in South Africa, the Bloodshot movie, so we talk about that. We talk about kind of his mental state after the whole situation and all the great stuff that he's got planned. He's got, his company, Hivemind, optioned Jeff Lemire's new book, and that's really exciting. They're going to be turning it onto TV. And, of course, a bunch of other things, plus some surprises. So listen to the whole thing. I apologize for the audio a little bit. We actually recorded on the phone, so we're actually on a phone call conversation. I normally do Skype on the interviews, but it was just the easiest thing to do at the time. I was actually at work when we recorded this, so pardon the kind of bad noise. I tried to fix it as best as I could, but there's definitely lots of great information in here. I hope you enjoy it, and thanks again to Dinesh for hanging out. Enjoy the interview.
Hey, you know what? You deserve a little rest, though. You know what I mean?
I don't know, man. I appreciate you saying that. How are you, though?
I'm good. I'm still stuck at work, so that's why I was like, we can make this work. I can make it work, but...
What do you want to do? Do you want to do tomorrow instead? Is that easier?
No, dude, it's fine. We just do it right now.
Okay. Yeah, you sure? You still...
Yeah.
Even from work?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. I can make it work.
Man, I feel so bad about all the moving it around. So look, whatever you want to talk about, let's talk about it. Let's talk about Valiant. I'll do my best. We'll just go from there.
I want to talk to you, but I want to talk to you about other stuff that you're doing. Cause,
cool. I mean, you're talking about.
You tweet all the time. You know, you talk about, you're tweeting about all the original art you're getting. Now you're getting into the EC Comics, which I freaking love. So, I mean, there's plenty to talk about. People are going to listen because you're on. You see what I'm saying? And they're going to want me to talk
about
that.
I don't know about that.
But it's not going to happen.
You're going to teach me? It's a bait and switch, man. It's false advertising.
Is that what it is?
Let's do it. I love it. Let's do it. I'm all about that.
I know you already saw that message that Dallo sent. I'm pretty sure
a lot
of people reached out to you after the whole situation happened, right?
Yeah, man. It was amazing. That part was amazing to see. You know, the response on Twitter the day it happened was just insane. It was a trending topic. I put that little quote up that I was legally asked to take down. Well, let me rephrase that. I was threatened with legal action if I didn't take down the Jim Shooter quote. It got this crazy response. I mean, thousands of people responded to it. And then after that came down, I started getting letters to my house. You know, at Valiant 15 years, in the beginning, there was no, like, barrier. It was just like, yeah, anything that we can do, you're a Valiant fan, here's my phone number, here's my address, and it just started getting out there. I got dozens and dozens of letters from people. I was just looking at them yesterday, because I've been unpacking. I've been in South Africa, obviously, and I just got back for a couple of days, and I've been unpacking a bunch of packages, and I found a few of the letters that I haven't opened yet. And I plan to write one back and some stuff, and so I've got to do that after Bloodshot wraps in October.
That's pretty sweet, man. Yeah, I think it's been interesting.
Amazing, Steve.
We were all very surprised. I know you and I had a little chat, I think like the day before, the day of. And I was like, oh, that's kind of shitty. But, you know, stuff happens, I guess. But
it's a testament to the success. You know, it wouldn't have happened if we were not incredibly successful.
Absolutely.
But, you know, these things happen. Hopefully they do right by the fans and the characters. The thing I tell everybody is Valiant has literally the most passionate fans. Even on Bloodshot, telling all the actors, you have no idea. I'm telling all the crewmen. Like, Lewis, our line producer, has been on these incredible movies like Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, tons and tons of movies, long career. And I'm like, man, you are going to be signing Bloodshot shit until the end of your life. And he's like, no, I don't believe him. Like, no, man, actually, could you sign my script? I literally did. I think actually could you sign my script?
Nice. That's awesome. And yeah, no, I can totally see it. I gotta tell you, at least for me, I've also wanted to take a little step back. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I don't want to yell on the point. Well, because, you know, like, I met you a bunch of times, and, you know, I talked to Hunter a lot, talked to Warren a lot, all those guys. You know, like, Lewis and Brian Reaver are locals, so I see him at cons all the time. And, it felt like there was like a personal relationship there in some ways. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, there was, man. I think we all considered you and so many other fans like personal relationships, personal friends. We were all in it together. Mm-hmm. That was the beautiful thing about it.
Man, oh man. How's the shooting going in Bloodshot?
Oh my God, I wish I could tell you what was going on. It's the footage is incredible. I will tell you, this movie is going to surprise the hell out of people. It feels very much like, I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels very much like when we were building XO1, when we were relaunching the universe, and it's this endeavor that everyone is like, this will never work. Valiant, there's no reason Valiant should come back. These characters are lame, they're dead. And in the office, we're like, no, we believe there's a core idea to each one of these characters that works into the universe. And then we're building it, we're putting Rob Venditti on board. Rob Venditti's first-time writer. We've got Dave Wilson, first-time director. But you're like, no, this dude is crazy talented. This is the way to go. This is the fresh, interesting way. And then you get this heavyweight brand like Harry Nord on X-Men Manowar, Vin Diesel on Bloodshot, and you're like, this is the right fit. You know, everything this guy has done up until now, Carry or Vin, makes sense to do this next. It's the perfect timing. But you're still also hearing everything everyone's saying, and you've got to keep an open mind. Maybe this is a bad idea. And I remember we got the first page of X-Men Manowar 1, issue 1, page 1 in. And I was in Warren's office, we were chatting, and it came in an email, Warren opened it up, and we both looked at it, and it's just a page of two Visigoths running up a hill, putting their armor on, and talking about the battle before we see the double page splash. Hadn't got that in yet. Just that first page. And you just know, this is gonna work. This is exactly what it should be, and you get that, like, sense of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I had the same thing right now at Bloodshot, man. We've shot a bunch of days, and I've seen the footage, and I've seen the performances, and I know the way Dave's gonna cut it together. And I know the script, we've been working on the script for 10 years. We've got an Oscar nominee who wrote it, Eric Heiser. I'm at that place where I know this thing's going to work, and I feel incredibly confident. And I'm just, it's a lot of work now to make sure that we don't drop the ball, that we just shoot that script and everyone's performance to stay as strong as they are. And everyone will. Everyone's working so hard. But I'm really excited, man. I think it's really going to take you by surprise and be a big deal. Just the way XO was, the way Valiant launched and publishing was in 2012, it feels very much like that.
Cool, man. Vin Diesel seems really excited, which is nice. You know what I'm saying? Dude,
he's crazy excited. You know who his favorite character in Valiant is? In all of Valiant, his favorite character is? I'm going to out him right now. It's crazy. The character he will not stop talking about. It's actually weird that he keeps talking about him so much. Bloodsquirt. He's obsessed with Bloodsquirt. Absolutely obsessed.
That's
which I love, because it's a deep, you know, that's a deep cut.
Yeah.
And you want someone, and he's so doing it, dude. It's like, he's just eating up the whole mythology, everything. He wants it to be so true to the fans, to the original books. I mean, it's just, that's what you want. You want someone that's so passionate and wants to do it right and wants to work hard and take the time. And luckily also is a fantastic superstar actor and a box office sensation and a megastar. And yeah, it's a dream.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you know, you can always feel when a project is good, when the people involved in the project really dig that what they're doing, you know what I'm saying? So it's nice that a guy like him has that passion for what he's doing, regardless of what it is, you know? And when you guys announced he was going to be involved, I was like, a lot of people were like, well, Vin Diesel, why Vin Diesel? And I'm like, dude, the guy makes some really fun movies, and he loves the hell out of what he does, you know what I'm saying? He has a ton of fun doing it. So why not Vin Diesel? He's freaking perfect.
I think so. He's always been top of my list, man. And I didn't know that we were going to get him because it's been so long, in the process. And, you know, he's just become a bigger and bigger star. Now he's got multiple franchises, but when we finally got him, it was just like, are you kidding? Like, how do these things happen? How do we get this lucky?
Mm-hmm.
And then Dave Wilson, dude, no one has worked harder. And I say this as a guy who worked really, 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 really hard at Valiant. No one has worked harder than Dave Wilson, a director, has. And it's going to show. He's really going to become a big deal. It's going to take people by surprise. I feel like I'm jinxing the movie now by saying this.
No,
it's
going to
be terrible. None of it's working. It's going to be a disaster. I'll leave it out a little bit.
No, man. Like, so many of us have been really excited for that kind of stuff. And I mean, you grew up really Valiant, so you're on this boat as well. But I remember going back and rereading some of the old stuff from the 90s. And, like, in the letters page saying, oh yeah, like, we're working on an EXO movie or whatever. And of course, none of that stuff came about. But now that we actually are going to get to finally see it, like, it's pretty exciting. You know, regardless of how it ends up being, I think a lot of us are still very hopeful it's going to be great.
Well, that business is very, 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 very tough. You know, I've talked to a lot of the old Valiant guys. I've seen a lot of the old documents and treatments and things, and they were working on a bunch of stuff. Some of it looked cool. Some of it I'm really happy didn't happen. It wouldn't have been good for the company. But that's, I'm sure there's stuff that I was working on that people are going to look back and say, oh, God, that didn't happen. It's really tough, man. Bloodshot's been in development 15 years. It basically started development the day that I got the assets. Started working on this film first. This was the one that I always thought should go first because it translated to a film genre the easiest. You know, Exo's the biggest character and the Harbinger is an amazing story, but they're just more centric tonally in comics. This felt centric in film, so it was a good way to dip movie fans' toes into the Valiant universe. But I'm lucky in a lot of ways that I get to just focus on the movie as a Phantom fan and be excited about it and not have to worry about it. If I was still CEO and CCO, I'd have to worry about, okay, how are we making sure the word's getting out there? How are we marketing this? How are we taking advantage of it in publishing? What are we doing with our trade program? We've got to build a whole line of books. Are we tying the mythology in the books properly to the movies? Are we bannering all the books? You know, I've got to gauge the reaction from the Valiant fans, the comic community, the broader community, the entertainment community, all of it. And now that's someone else's problem. And they're making different choices that I would have made. They're very quiet right now, which I think is strange, but I don't know the inner workings of what's going on over there. I'm just going to assume that they have a plan.
Yeah, right. So you've got a new company. What's your company's involvement with the film? So, I mean, obviously, it's a movie company, right? So is it just a...
I've partnered with several producers in a film and TV production company called Hivemind. It's one of the things I'm doing. So I took a hard look at, you know, I was all in on Valiant, man. Like, it felt like I went up to the craps table 15 years ago, and I put a bet down on Black, and I put everything I owned, my entire savings on Black, and I won. And I went, you know what? I'm going to let it ride. And I feel like I was betting every day for 15 years and letting it ride and letting it ride and letting it ride. And it really, there's a lot of stress in that because every single email, every meeting, every phone call, you're not just risking that, whatever that phone call's about, you're risking every single thing you've done up until that moment, including everything you sacrificed before, every meeting, phone call, email, whatever you've done before. It's a lot of pressure. And so I did a lot of thinking after Valiant about whether I wanted to do that again. And I decided, you know what, I'm in a position now. I was lucky enough to have Valiant be so successful and people look at me and say, okay, he's one of the guys who did that, and it's opened doors for me, that I'm not putting myself in a position to be full-time or exclusive anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I have this film and TV production. There's a lot of cool shit we're doing there. The producers already had The Expanse, which is this amazing show, just moved to Amazon.
Yeah.
Gideon Falls with Jeff Lemire. The Witcher, I can't tell you anything about, but that's going to be a massive, massive, massive show.
Wait a second. You're involved in all that stuff?
Yeah, the company that I'm working with is involved in all that stuff, and I'm involved in various pieces of it. But I'm very closely tied to Gideon Falls. I'm helping the guys out on The Witcher. I'm not as involved on The Expanse. That's their baby. They're doing an amazing job. I get to watch and help when they need help, but it's you know, just my two cents. And there's a ton of other stuff, man. A ton of stuff. There's tons of comic stuff we're going to do. There's a reason I've been doing a little research on EC Comics, for instance. And then the movie's separate. So Bloodshot's separate. I'm doing that on the Sony side, not on the Valiant side. So in a sense, working across the table from Valiant.
Right.
And then Harbinger's really heating up. Again, I'm not in a position anymore where I get to decide what goes out to the public and doesn't, so I can't say much about Harbinger other than I hope you've got your copies of Harbinger 1, man. But because that one's really heating up, especially with Bloodshot now looking great.
Mm-hmm.
So anything very bullish on that and Faith. I wouldn't be surprised if the Secret Weapons TV show was in the works as well. But that's, you know, that's not happening. I wouldn't be surprised if they got bullish and wanted to do that. I've been pitching that to them for a long time. And Eric has been pitching that for a long time. And then there's a couple other things I haven't announced yet. I'm going to be doing something in comics, and something in toys as well.
Nice.
But that's a little bit down the road. I want to give a little bit of space between Valiant and myself before I announce the comics thing.
How are you dealing with your new role? Now that you're not involved with the comic side, I mean, you're still doing some, I don't know. I mean, you still obviously have to deal with public in some way, but the company that you're working with now is very different from what you were doing at Valiant. How are you dealing with the transition from one to the other? I mean, I know you took a little vacation. I saw your Hawaii pictures.
I took a week.
But how
took
are you
a week
dealing
Hawaii.
With that now?
I'm taking this year, 2018, and I'm just gonna chill out a little bit. I'm gonna fill this giant Valiant shaped hole in my heart with original art and card books. I'm gonna spend some time on my life because I basically gave up every relationship I had in my life. The whole time I was at Valiant, as a lot of people at Valiant did. So I'm gonna repair that. I'm spending a lot of time with friends and family. Well, I don't have any friends anymore. I'm trying to make new friends and spend a lot of time with family. They're the ones that couldn't leave me when I ignored them for 15 years.
Yeah.
And then next year, I'm diving back into comics. And I at Valiant, a lot of the time, then we'd have our knocks, you know, we'd have our stumbles. And the thing I would always tell all the guys is advice that I'm now heeding, which is I tell them about Muhammad Ali. I love Muhammad Ali, and he's the greatest of all time. And what's fascinating about him is people think he's the greatest of all time because he's the most heavyweight champion of all time. He's the most winningest heavyweight champion of all time. He won the most titles. He's actually the greatest because he lost the most titles, I think.
Hmm.
The greatness of Muhammad Ali is that he got to the top, right, which is super hard to do.
Right.
Nothing, become heavyweight champion of the world. And then he lost. And then I think it's harder the second time around. Because the second time around, you have something to lose. And he did it again. He became heavyweight champion of the world again. And then he lost again. And then he did it a third time, man. Like, that's infinitely more difficult than the first or second time. To be this guy that doesn't have... The whole world still saying, you're great, you're two-time heavyweight champion of the world. And you're like, no, man, I got something to prove. You're not letting them douse the fire inside you. And what's great about that is after he lost the third time, he did it again and again and again. He kept trying. That dude was like 40-something years old, I believe, when he stopped trying to be heavyweight champion of the world. That fire never went out. And so I look at the opportunity I have like that. 2019, I'm going to launch a new publishing company, and I'm just going to go for the heavyweight championship again. I'm going to try to do the same thing again.
See, that's a good lesson.
Build it the right way.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great lesson. I think people don't think about that kind of stuff enough, right? You feel like you fail and you're a failure and you just don't want to try again. But it's so important to want to keep going, you know what I'm saying? Because you can always do something bigger, right? And obviously you had a great run at Valiant, and now you're doing Hivemind and all the other stuff that you've got coming out. So that's exciting, dude.
Everything at Valiant, man, I could not have asked for more. The line for me of success, I passed so many years ago and then just got, like, my cup runneth over, you know? The stuff that happened. Yeah, I'm super bummed about it. We have a movie, Valiant's first movie. I think it's going to be a hit. I put my heart and soul into it. There's a lot of people. When it comes out, I have all these plans for how to build the universe, cinematic universe, how to take advantage of publishing, how to build a company to a place where it is self-sufficient and continues and no one can break it. Right now, it's still fragile enough that it can be broken. And it's I'm heartbroken that I'm not able to be there to protect it. But I can't be angry about that. I'm lucky in the sense that Valiant had a run once, and I got to look at what everyone did the first time around and take advantage of their successes and avoid their failures. And doing that again, I looked at all the creators that were ousted that had the same heartbreak and how they handled it, and I chose not to be defined by anger and chose not to be defined by the failure. I'm choosing to be defined by the opportunity of what's next.
Well, you gotta think too about the journey, right? Because think about, not just in terms of the fans, but in terms of like creators that you guys dealt with that are all kind of bigger names, right? Like Venditti, you guys gave that guy a shot, and now, you know, he's dead set over at DC. He's good to go. You know, Jeff has become a big star. Matt Kent has become a big star. Like, Rafa Sandoval's over at DC. All these guys are doing really big things. And even though they're not involved with that company anymore, you know, you guys were the people that gave them that start. And that's important.
Yeah, a lot of them, Venditti, certainly his first monthly comic book was at Valiant. He and Warren worked very, very closely together on that. And now he's a massive sensation over at DC. People like Jeff and Matt, they were on their way. They certainly were not unknowns. They were stars. But now they've become, I mean, two of the biggest writers in comics. We didn't give them their start, but we certainly helped them on their way. And I think that books like The Valiant, Bloodshot, and Divinity, certainly we protected them. And the thing that we offered everyone was, look, we can't promise that it's going to be the biggest selling book, as big as an X-Men book, but we can promise that it'll be good. We'll give it all the resources we can. We'll give it, we'll protect it. That's what we care about. And for a lot of people, that was not just enough, that was more than what other people were offering.
Right.
Depends what's important.
Yeah, that makes sense. What was it about Gideon Falls that that intrigued you enough where you guys optioned that? Or are you guys doing film or TV on that?
TV, it's a television show.
TV, okay.
And it's development work. I don't want to put it in a place where people have expectations for the Falls. This stuff takes a long time,
mm-hmm.
as you can see from Bloodshot. And it's not like a television show is going to be on the air next season. We're going to take our time. We're going to build it right. Jeff and Andrea are super involved. They're more involved than I can think of any other creative thing involved in the project. And that's kind of what Hive Mind's about. It's about partnering, whether it's creators or authors or cartoonists or designers or whatever it is, making them full partners. I love that ethos. It's the ethos you shared about it. But what about Gideon Falls that really attracted all of us is, first of all, I know where it goes. I know what happens. Although Jeff is always building bigger and bigger plans. But the core idea of this parallel timeline, this crazy house, big horror idea, building elements of psychology, the way that he's built. I'm pausing because I'm trying not to give away. I'm trying to remember what's out and what's not out. But there's amazing. It's an amazing genre blend of science fiction and horror, but like growing horror. And then the psychological component in the mental illness. It's just, you always look for something that has a metaphor so that anyone in the world can find some truth in it. And then you look for a tone that is different than everything else out there. Why is it unique? And Jeff built that every time out. Every time out, he just hits that, bullseye. And Gideon Falls is I think one of his best work. So I'm super excited about it. That's what.
It's really different than anything else he does. I was pretty stoked because when 2 issues had come out when you guys announced it maybe, and I was really excited because it gave me that Outcast vibe, but I felt like when Outcast was translated from comic to TV, it didn't quite work as well. And I don't know if it's the fact that like the first arc or two of Outcast were in the first episode and it made it seem a little off in that regard. But I was really excited as a result because I love that genre, right? Like horror is one of my favorite things. Horror and sci-fi are my two favorite genres. And, I read a ton of horror books and to have that kind of thing on TV where it's really engrossing, right? In particular, the way that Jeff develops all his characters. I don't know how much you read Black Hammer, but like the world building. That
I know Black Hammer very well. Black Hammer is maybe the best book on the market right now.
It's crazy, right? And he does so many things that like tie together into, I don't know, like a single storyline. Like what's the one set in the future? God, I wish I remembered. Oh, the Quantum Age.
Trillium. Quantum Age. The Black Hammer book. Yeah. Quantum Age.
That's my favorite one right now. Even though it's really very indirectly tied to the original Black Hammer stuff. We're at a point in the story where I'm like, holy crap, like this ties into the stuff that we saw in the first Black Hammer series and, you know, the Dr. Stark stuff. So yeah, Jeff is freaking awesome. I'm excited that,
Jeff's a genius, man. It's all gonna tie together. Even the stuff that he's telling us isn't gonna tie together. It's gonna tie together. He's just too big a thinker.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when he's allowed to do whatever he wants, you know? I'm sure that
someone
there's
should
no...
adapt Black Hammer.
Well, someone should. Maybe like Hive Mind.
Someone should.
Oh, man. I want to get your thoughts on a couple things.
Yeah.
I know that you're a big X-Men guy.
Yeah, big X-Men guy. Everyone's a big X-Men guy, don't they?
That's true. Well, like the X-Men. I mean, they're big, like, Claremont X-Men guys. What are they big?
Yeah, Warren's a big Claremont X-Men guy. Oh, my God, Warren is... That's his sweet spot, man.
Really?
The Claremont burn X-Men? Oh, my God, it's like, it's crazy. It's a catnip for him. I mean, obscure stuff. You'd be like, Dinesh, this next arc, it should be like, you know, I think it should be like Murder World. And I'm like, cool, what's Murder World? You know, from the X-Men, I vaguely remember Murder World. Let me go pull my copies out and read them. But he'd be like, no, I'll pitch you. Scene one, this is what happened to Murder World. I said, okay. I don't even remember if I'm saying it right. Is it Murder World or Murders? It was something like that. He loves that arc.
I don't know Murder World.
But, right, exactly, but you would if you saw the cover. I'm going to Google it right now. I'll tell you which one it is. Murder World from Marvel. Yeah, here we go. What's the first issue? I'll find it. Let's keep talking. I'll find it.
Oh, you're fine. So, I since you're no longer at Valiant, I think you can really discuss your opinion.
X-Men 123. Uncanny X-Men 123.
Uncanny 123? Alright, I'm gonna read that tonight.
Arcade's Murder World. It's good.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about now.
Yeah, okay. Spidey's in it.
Yeah. So, alright. Marvel's relaunching Uncanny. I don't know if you heard about this.
They're relaunching Uncanny.
It seems a little odd to me that they have three different writers, three different artists. I'm assuming maybe because of the scheduling. We'll just go with that.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Yeah, it might have been probably a scheduling thing. I'm guessing. I don't know. Three artists certainly, I know they've done that in the past with scheduling. They don't work as far out ahead as we work. I don't think anyone works as far out ahead as we do. But three writers? Not sure.
Yeah, three writers. I think they're switching off. They're kicking off with a 10-issue weekly arc.
Oh, it's a weekly. That's why. Weeklies are...
At least the first 10 issues.
Okay.
So let me ask you, how do you feel now that you're out of comics with these kind of scheduling shenanigans, I would say? Do you feel like maybe it's a little overbearing for some people?
You're not leading with this question at all.
Like the bi-weekly that DC does, I think even that is a little tough sometimes. You know, I ended up dropping a lot of their books because, I mean, it's tough when if they're putting out 80 books, how are you going to 160 books.
Look, there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's something you're saying when I'm now that I'm out of value. I would happy to talk about it at value too. I think we did talk about it. But a weekly book is something we tried to make work several times. Especially Warren and I. We loved the idea on one half of the coin. And that is that you have this problem in comics where the distribution system is defined by the old magazine distribution system. Every 30 days, magazines would come out, comics would be put in the same trucks. There's already a distribution system, so comics just piggyback that, which made a 30-day cycle for comic book storytelling, de facto comic book storytelling. Today, in a world of instant gratification online, binge viewing on Netflix and Amazon, etc., it's becoming a very antiquated way to consume storytelling. And it's tough, man. You get one story in equivalent of like 5 to 10 minute pieces of a movie over the course of 30-day periods, over the course of, 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine watching a movie that way. It's very difficult. It's off-putting for a lot of the general audience. It's really people like you and me that love it so much and have read it continuously or almost continuously our whole lives where we put up with it. We don't even see it anymore. But my wife, she could read monthly comics as they were coming out. Gaps are too big, she'd forget what happened. So, and that's why also trades are very popular. So that, solving that by doing a weekly book is great. And, DC did it a number of years ago with 52, worked really well. The flip side of that is you're asking your two consumers, right? Your retail partners and your end readers, your fans, to pony up a lot more money than they normally would. Instead of $3.99, or sometimes $4.99, or whatever they're charging these days, that they think they can get away with, you're paying four times that. That's a real big burden. It's a burden for the retailer, because it's a cash for the book, but four issues of the book without knowing anything about how fans are taking the story. And then fans have to come in every week, which is not just a $3.99 problem, but it's a gas and time problem as well.
Mm-hmm.
Warren and I talked a lot about, and Fred hated it, we talked a lot about trying to build a book where all four issues would hit the stands at once, but decreasing the price significantly enough so that instead of having to pay $3.99 four times on the same day, you were spending the equivalent of, say, $6 or $7. You're getting four issues for 50% more money than one issue, and you're getting it all at once. Kind of like dropping an OGN.
Yeah.
But keeping that kind of numerology, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the collectability of having four issues individually. There's a lot that goes into that I think people ignore. It's why Marvel and DC keep switching back and forth between new numbering and old numbering and new numbering and old numbering. And it's why zero issues work. It's why anniversary issues work. It's why, you know, DC can do a Detective Comics 27 and it makes sense because the original Detective Comics 27 has a mystique about it. There's a lot in numerology and comics that I don't hear people talk about very much. It's a big component of the publishing side.
There's a couple of indie publishers that they're trying interesting stuff with that. I know I read a book from Action Lab recently, and what they've been doing is sometimes when they want to give a particular creator a shot, they'll release the whole miniseries. If it's like a 6-issue mini, that's planned, they'll do two issues, but they're oversized, right? So they're like, whatever, 66 pages, 68 pages, and they sell them, whatever, $4.99, right? So it's a little cheaper than if you were to buy the individual issues, but you're only really buying two issues for six issues worth of story. And I think that's really fascinating. I hadn't thought, you brought up a point that I hadn't thought about when you said releasing the four at once is the collectability factor, right? Because a lot
it's
of times
just what Netflix does, man.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't do one long episode. They still give you 12 episodes. You just watch them all at once. And that break is really interesting because psychologically we're trained to consume things that way. So why try and make the consumer have to do two new things? Give them four issues, but give them at once. That's the one new idea. Binge viewing, binge reading, but still four issues.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you think that maybe when comics went from newsstand to direct market, that kind of affected the readership a little bit more? Because obviously going to direct market was great for publishers, right? You had a kind of guaranteed distribution. You were able to sell directly to shops. And, you know, I mean, when shops order, they sometimes order for the fan base that they have, the customer base that they have. But a lot of times they'll order many extra, just for the collectors, for example, right? I mean, Valiant did that a lot. You guys did, the 1-500 covers, things like that, where
they generally wouldn't do that. I hear this a lot. The direct market, I think, is a boon to publishers, but there's some fallacies in that. There's no guaranteed distribution system there. It's just as hard as it is in newsstand. In fact, newsstand, the publishers would decide what to send in.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had newsstand, we would decide which books and how many copies. Whereas in the direct market, the retailer decides, and they can order nothing. So in effect, it's the opposite of a guarantee. It's no guarantee where newsstand was. I think the direct market is amazing for consumers, though. It's amazing for fans, because you're building these spots all over the world that are just meccas of comic book content. You can go and have this huge selection. They're educated. They're informed. They are welcoming for the most part. You can go week after week and build a pull list, things that you couldn't do in the newsstand. So I like direct market for everybody. And I think, honestly, if we didn't have the direct market, I don't think the comics would be around. As crazy as that sounds, maybe I'm wrong there, but I think direct market saved comics. There's lots of problems in the direct market, lots of problems. And things change, and things that weren't problems before are problems now, but there's so many benefits. Man, if we were dealing with the newsstand right now, it could be like magazines.
Yeah.
Or newspapers.
Yeah, that was rough. That was rough. And, you know, like DC and
Batman may still be printed, but I don't think you'd get Red Hood and the Outlaws. I don't think you'd get Nightwing. I don't think you'd get all the other books. I don't think you'd get Valiant. Valiant wouldn't exist.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, you know, DC's doing the Walmart exclusive books, the 100-page giants, which those are pretty interesting.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I don't know how well they're doing for them, but at least they're trying something else. See, I remember, like, they used to do the three packs all the time, the blind bags. A lot of people used to do it, like Image did them, obviously DC and Marvel.
That was old content. That was essentially second run. You think about, like, movie theaters? Your first one was the direct market or newsstand. It was still around at that point. And then the second one would be these blind bags where they would just try and offload inventory. Now they're talking about doing news stories, which I assume that their orders are very high because it's something the retailers have pushed back on very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine will have an impact in DC and whoever else is doing its direct market sales. But they must feel there's a benefit to doing it either in sales right now to Walmart or long-term readership. And I think ultimately it won't hurt the retailers. I think it'll help them. I think if DC are able to create new fans like going through Walmart, those fans will eventually create super fans that will start to read fervently enough that they'll go into retail stores. Same thing that happened in digital.
Yeah. So you've done the comic thing, and now you did the movie thing before, you did the movie thing again. I want to ask you about the move to digital, how you feel that's affecting those markets. And I'm not talking about like right now, but maybe in like 5 years or 10 years. Because oftentimes I feel like, you know, you hear about shops closing all the time, right? And there could be many reasons why they're closing. It doesn't have to be because people aren't buying comics. Although, I mean, you could definitely argue that
closing is natural. There's so many stores, shops are going to close. Shops are going to open. There was a point in which, you know, because they get reported. Shops closing is an interesting news story. Shops opening, not so interesting. So you hear a lot about shops closing. And there were some of the more junior people at Valiant were starting to get jittery about 2 years ago when there was a lot of talk about shops closing. And I went and asked Diamond, can you give me numbers for how many new accounts you open every week and how many you close? And I obviously couldn't share this publicly, but they gave me a sense. And I showed the team. I said, look, they are opening more new stores than they're closing every week.
Mm-hmm.
This is during a period in which everyone's saying threat market's dying, too many stores are closing. Threat market's strong, man. It's super strong. At least it was until January. I haven't really paid attention since January, since I left, but it was super strong in January.
And I know that Comic Salvage doesn't release numbers, but we know that it's a fraction of print comics anyway, right? So
you're talking about digital? Digital, yeah. Digital is a fraction, and it's decreasing.
Really? Interesting. Mm. Yeah, I think there's a, you know, I was actually talking about this on Twitter last week, maybe 2 weeks ago. I've gone mostly digital. I'm getting literally a handful of books. I can probably count
You're the exception.
That I'm doing physical. But the thing is, I was talking about it publicly because I'm considering going back to physical comics.
Ah, see, now you're not the exception. I was just going to say, you're the exception. But that actually is exactly what happens to people. You go to digital. I did the same thing. You go to digital, you're like, this is amazing. I don't have to worry about storing comics. It's like cheaper because I can do the sales. I don't have to go to the store. This is great. And then you kind of miss having your comics. Enough time goes by and you're like, I wish I had that actual physical issue. That one went up in value. That one's, you know, one of my favorite books. I'm going to go buy that anyway. And what happens eventually, I'll predict what's going to happen tomorrow. What's going to happen is you're going to wake up in the morning and the books you're most excited about, the two or three every week, you're going to buy digitally, you're going to, especially first issues, you're going to sample them. You're going to go into the store later that day or maybe the next day. You're going to buy your entire pull list, 20, 30 books, whatever you buy. And having sampled the first issues or the ones you're very excited about, you'll decide whether you're going to pick up those as well or not. But it's just going to end up being, I couldn't wait. First thing in the morning you wake up, you read them. Or I'm going to check this out digitally, and then if I really like it, I'll keep buying print issues after that. And I'll go back and buy issue 1 and 2. I'll buy a second copy.
Well, you know, my problem is I can't read enough comics. It's a problem. I need to seek help. I'm reading like 20, 30 books a week. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, that's
a lot easier to do the digital thing. But at the same time, like I miss holding in my hand, you know, and that paper smell. There's just something about like the tactile feeling of having a comic in front of you. In particular,
there's something in the experience about actually physically going to the store as well. It adds to the experience. And comics are built for a full page. Comics are the writers and the artists, the editors, everybody build comics so that you're looking at them panel by panel, you're following the flow, and you're also subconsciously seeing the entire page and sometimes double pages. Even if they're not spread, you're taking that in. There's a storytelling effect. Take a look at anything David Aja does.
Mm-hmm.
And don't look at the panels, don't look at the storytelling, just look at the picture that one page makes. Whether it's one panel, or 15 panels, or 9 panels, whatever it is, just take a look at that. And it's almost like a magic eye. You look at it long enough, and you're like, oh wow, there's another image here. And it's made up of these 9 panels. And it's subtle. Sometimes it's a flow, sometimes it's a literal arrow. You hide imagery in there. And it has a subconscious impact on the storytelling.
I don't know if you've written it, but he's got a new book out called Seeds.
He's writing it.
Oh my god, dude, it's so good.
Beautiful book.
It's
I'm super
great.
Confused as to what's happening in the story, but I'm excited. I'm like so in.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. That's kind of been my dilemma lately, you know? Because think about it, like, that adds up to 100 plus books a month, and I know people that buy even more than that, right? So I know that Mike chimed in today on our Twitter conversation. And, I mean, Mike gets literally every comic that comes out, he buys, right? So that's hundreds of books a month. And he doesn't have
time for everything.
Oh, yeah. He literally buys basically every comic from publishers you've probably never even heard of.
See, that was one of the things we were trying to do at Valiant, is build the line so that you could read, not just from a money standpoint, but a time standpoint as well, the entire universe. So we never got to that point. As long as I was there, it was going to stay this way. You never got to a place where there was 100 books coming out a month and you couldn't afford them and you certainly couldn't find the time to read them all.
Mm-hmm.
Very much that Stanley model. If you commit to reading Valiant, you can read just one book or you can read the whole universe and you don't have to worry about it putting you out on that. So you've made this investment and we're saying now we have to put too many books out.
Yeah.
I wager they will not continue that. I wager that they will. They need time to figure this shit out, but I wager they will increase the line.
No, yeah, the output's definitely decreased a little bit, I would say. I mean, it was decreasing before the changeover, but You know, one thing
it wasn't decreasing before the changeover. We were gearing up for Harbinger Wars 2, and then there was going to be a massive change after Harbinger Wars 2. You know, wanted to never keep the link stale. Harbinger Wars 2 became a very, very different story. And a lot of creators, I think, left, and so the books that we had built, no longer were on the slate anymore. And gambles that I was going to take, the people that remained didn't want to take them anymore. Which is unfortunate. I don't think we took a gamble in 7 years of publishing that didn't pay off. But I wasn't the one calling the shots in.
Sure. Well, you know, one gamble you didn't take that I wish you guys would have.
Mm.
One of my favorite formats is the anthology format, and there was never a Valiant anthology. And I know that anthologies don't sell very
death.
Well.
That's just death. we'd love to have done it. We talked about it a lot, but it's just there's no data to prove that it works. Both from the creative side, where you're splitting a story up, from the retail side, where you're asking retailers to take a bad bet from a cash flow standpoint, and the consumer side, where you're amplifying all the problems we talked about in terms of the 30-day wait between stories. Mm. It's just, why do you like anthologies? What is it about anthologies that you like? Because I wager you like the idea of them, but you don't actually like them. I wager that if we did an anthology, you would buy the first couple issues and then you would stop.
I promise you I would buy all of them. Whenever anybody does an anthology book, I go out and buy it. Like Marvel right now is trying to bring back like the What If stuff, right? Which was kind of like an anthology. Not quite an anthology.
Are you reading Dark Horse Presents?
I am reading Dark Horse Presents.
There's a pause there. I'm not sure I believe you.
No, I am.
That's a good book.
Alterna's got one. I think it's called, it came out on a Wednesday that just came out. Aftershock just recently did an oversized hardcover one-shot anthology. That was fantastic. There's a lot that I like about it, dude, because you get exposure to a lot of different types of stories, right? They don't necessarily have to have a theme with them.
We did one-shot anthologies in terms of the anniversary issues and one-shots. We did that several times, more than several times. All the issue 25s were and multiple stories in them with different tones.
Yeah.
We did a bunch of one-shots, the Valiant Science, Quantum Moody, for instance.
Oh, that was my favorite one, dude. I was not a Woody fan until the Valiant Size came out. And then I was like, this is freaking brilliant.
I think it's our most unappreciated book. It didn't sell well, which is the other problem. You know, those kinds of books, it's very hard for the retailers to take that bet. And so it didn't get into the hands of a lot of people, ultimately. But it's one of my favorite books that we did.
Yeah, brilliant.
And a big source of influence on the television show. Which is the other thing that I'm still involved in, is the Quantum Moody television show.
Nice. So all that stuff's still being worked on, right? Because you guys, I think I talked about Quantum Moody, there was that Archer and Armstrong, there was Dr. Mirage, all that kind of stuff.
As far as I know, the only stuff that's still going is Bloodshot, Harbinger, and Quantum Moody.
Okay.
Everything else. It's tough, man. You work with someone for... The thing about Hollywood is you can't just come in and say, I own this, therefore I'm involved. It doesn't work that way. Almost everybody wants to be involved in movies and TV shows, right? And there's every project has more people that want to be involved than can be involved or even should be involved. And so, naturally, you get a selection that happens where only the people that are most valuable or trusted or value add stay involved. And unfortunately, I don't know the people that took over Valiant understood that. So they came in and they were like, now we're involved in all these things, the next year's no longer involved, we're taking over. And unfortunately, the people that I brought on, the attachments, were like, what are you talking about? No, we're out then. We're gone. We're done. Same thing happened in publishing. They're not public about it. There hasn't really been a lot of talk about it, but when's the last time you heard anything about anything Valiant in terms of film or TV outside of the Bloodshot movie? Usually because I'm putting it out there.
Yeah. And you know, not to say anything about it.
It's tough for them, man, because it's something, if they can't win. If they do it and it comes out and it's great, I'm going to get credit. And if they do it and it comes out and it's terrible, they're going to get blamed. So they can't win. It's probably why they're not really promoting Bloodshot. I mean, if Hunter and I and Warren and all those guys are still at Valiant, I mean, we'd be screaming that thing from the rooftops. You'd be calling me saying, Dinesh, stop it. We get it. You guys are making a movie. We fucking get it. Stop it. But now they're barely talking about it. I think it's because the Valiant proposition for them is, it doesn't make sense. Zero-sum game. Yeah. I'm not sure I use either of those phrases right. Valiant proposition is zero-sum game. As I told you, my brain has decided not to work anymore.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Yeah, they're in a tough spot, and I can definitely understand that, I guess. But I don't know, man. I don't know.
They're in a great spot, dude. They got great characters. They've got 7 years of really quality storytelling built on the backs of some of the best creators in town. It's an enviable position. Anyone in comics would walk into their shoes and take that position because there's so much you could do with it. So we should expect, as I'm saying, we as a fan now, we should expect them to at least continue the quality and the excitement. If they get the right creators, they will.
You're right.
The right choices.
You're right. And I know that they're about to launch a bunch of books as well. The Livewire, I can't remember the other one.
They've got Livewire, they've got a Fate book, I think. I saw that.
Yep.
They've got Excursion. I think that might be an event or something.
Yeah.
There's one more.
Yeah, the Bloodshot book.
Oh yeah, Rising Spirit.
Yeah, Rising Spirit. Which I'm excited for because I love Zach and Lonnie. They're freaking awesome. I got to talk to them, I don't know, about 2 months ago. They are really smart guys, so.
Yeah, are they the writers?
Yeah, they're writing. It's a writing duo.
Okay. Cool. I hope that they, because it's an origin. It was something that Hunter and I pitched for years at Valiant is to do a book called Rising Spirit. It was an origin story of Bloodshot. And the idea was to do it in time with the movie. So I guess that they people that were still there remember that, so they were doing it. But the idea was always to tie it into the mythology of what the movie's going, because it'll be the biggest Valiant event. Hopefully, if we get it right, it'll be the biggest, the most eyeball. More people will have Valiant defined for them by that than any book that's ever come out. So the idea was to tie it into that. And the movie is tonally, character-wise, world-wise, derived from the books. It's not going to feel different. But there are new characters, new ideas, etc. Of course, you want to keep some surprises. So it was a way to tie the two together. Closely. I hope they do that. I really hope what they don't do is undermine that or contradict that. Because there was a lot of... we had a great opportunity, Warren and I. We were able to take the best of the original Valiant and modernize it and add to it. And hopefully when we're adding to it, add to it with things that are as strong. But we also got to leave things behind. We got to leave the dreads on the spider aliens behind and the big goggles. And we got to leave Angela Mortali behind and the mafia thing. It doesn't really work today. You know, the mafia element was a real element in the world in the 90s. Today, mafia's been eradicated for the most part.
Yep.
Angela Mortali is not a name that really works for that character in today's world. We have to leave a lot of those kinds of things behind. And it was nice to be able to clean the slate a little bit. And then, of course, as we were publishing, we added our own, you know, the timing, the constant churn to put books out. If you had more time, you'd make a perfect book every time out. But you have to make compromises. So we added our own silliness, I'm sure. There's plenty of stuff in there that in hindsight, wouldn't have done. I can think of a few off the top of my head. But I feel pretty good about it. Overall, I feel like we hit a 90% batting rate.
Out of curiosity, I know you're trying to work on yourself and distance yourself a little bit, but do you ever find yourself wanting to go and read some of the books and see what's going on?
I think I will later. Not at the moment, because everything that's coming out now is stuff that I built with the team. It's
sure.
Nothing that I didn't build. So I know what we were going to do, and everything that I've seen, honestly, is different in a way that I personally think is not the right choice.
Mm.
Like, I look at Harbin... Well, I'm not going to say that, actually. And so, I know I'm going to be disappointed. Or it'll be, you know, there's creators like Andy Diggle on Shadow Man, and Christos Gage on Ninja K, and mm-hmm. Jeff Lemire on Bloodshot, just to name a few. And I'm like, yeah, those guys are going to kill it. And I see reviews, and they're like, amazing book, like, great. And I remember them pitching it. I remember thinking, wow, that's an amazing idea. So I feel like either I know what's in there, at best it's going to be what I hoped it was going to be, at worst I'm going to be horribly disappointed. But I think I will sample some of the stuff that's new. Like Livewire is a book that's all them. The New Faith book is all them. Excursion is all them. Rising Spirit is not really, because that was an idea that Hunter and I came up with and had a very specific point of view for.
Yeah.
But anything after that will be all them. So I'll check those out. It'll be nice to not know.
I bet. I always have that picture in my mind, and that you probably don't want me to bring this up. But there's that famous picture of you with the Valiant cake. What was that, like your 12th birthday party?
Oh, right. Famous? Is it famous now? Great.
It's pretty famous. Well, it's famous for Valiant fans. I don't think every Valiant fan sees
it. Valiant fans. Yes, but the Valiant logo birthday cake.
Yeah, the Valiant logo birthday cake. I always think about that.
Delicious.
The picture's kind of like been in my head ever since the whole changeover happened. Cause you know, what you guys did and what you in particular did, I think, really excited a lot of people. And I know for myself, for example, I built a lot of friends and a community around the fact that I was a Valiant fan. And even if I'm not as involved with that anymore, right? Like, we're not even doing the podcast anymore. Paul and I decided
to
do different things. Yeah. We stopped very shortly after the changeover. Cause just like you needed some time, I felt like we both needed a little bit of time away from things.
They handled it very poorly, and they should not have announced that all the C-level employees were being ousted day one. They should not have come in and said they were doing movies and TV shows and didn't care about comics. They should not have let all the big brains, Warren, Hunter, Adam, Josh, Danny, Shanice, I mean, like, it's a massive list of people. It's like a dozen people. It's like half the company, more than a dozen people, but walk out the door in the next 90 days. They shouldn't let that happen. And then half the creators, they handled it very poorly, but they've got Fred Pierce, who is the best production guy in the business. They've got Joe Illich, who is an awesome, awesome person.
Yep.
They've still got a great team, man. Rob Myers is still there. Peter Stern is still there. He's the keeper of the flame. They've still got all the great characters. They're building on top of all the stuff that Rob Venditti and Josh Dicer and Friends of Lente and Dwayne and Jeff Lemire and Matt Kinn, all those guys built. We've got character designs from David Aja, Louis LaRosa, and Trevor Hairstein, Ryan Sook, and, you know, they can do a 4002 book, they can do an Armor Hunter sequel, there's so much they can do. They got a movie coming out. I mean, Valiant has never been in a stronger position than the position they're walking into. And it's on the backs of so many people that are very dear to me. I saw so many people sacrifice family, friends, health. There's not a person that was on the 2012 team that did not have a massive health problem because of stress or overwork over the course of the 7 years that we were. I can name any single person and tell you what was it. And sometimes it's more than one thing. That's how much people cared about what was going on. It was a real mission. It was like I used to call it the Dirty Dozen because we would all die to get to the finish line. And so I'm going to hold them to a very high bar, but they also have a great opportunity. And I'm an optimist. I'd like to think they're going to knock it out of the park.
I sure hope so. I'm gonna wrap it up. I'm gonna let you go. Is there any final thoughts that you want to bring out before we wrap it up?
I'm happy to talk to you, dude.
I changed my number, so I'll send you my new number.
Yeah, will you text me your number?
Yeah, I'll text you my number. That way we can chat sometime. But yeah, don't be a stranger, man. And once you've gone on your kind of settling down on your wanderlust, your journey of self discovery, then we should.
We should. I'm not doing any cons this year, I don't think. I'm going to be in South Africa still shooting during New York Comic Con. I won't be able to get away. But next year, especially after I announce, I still want to tell you, dude, what I'm doing on the publishing side. It's going to be such a fucking right hook. After we announce that, I'm going to be hitting it again. So let me know what shows you're at, and then I will buy you many drinks. Many drinks. All the beers.
Hell yeah.
I'll drink them dry.
Well, you know, I'm always at SC Comic Con, and I've been going to C2E2, so
make
that work. C2E2 is a big con, dude. You should do that.
Yeah, no, next year at C2E2, I will be there, 100%. I'm going to try and go down to NC Comic Con this year. It's a show I love so, so, so much. SC Comic Con is the other one I love that much. But the timing doesn't work. I was there this year. I went down for a day this year. I'm going to try to go to NC Comic Con. I think the schedule might work. I think we'll just have wrapped.
Yeah, I think it's in November, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and we wrap at the end of October, so
yep.
Anyway, I'll be just home, and then I'll be able to jump on a plane and just do a couple of days.
Well, if you do, let me know, man. We'll get together.
Yeah, I will. You can come help me buy a bunch of comic books. I'm going to buy so many comic books.
Hell yeah. All right, dude, it was a pleasure. I'm glad we finally figured out.
Yeah, thanks for taking time, man.
I wish you the best. I wish you the best. And I
thanks,
hope
dude.
This self-discovery thing works out well for you.
I love that you keep calling it self-discovery thing. It's not a self-discovery thing. I'm just taking a break.
Well, you know, like, you grew this long beard out, and you look super spiffy, you know what I'm saying?
Retirement beard.
Yeah, there you go.
I shaved my head. Beard is shorter now, but I shaved my head.
Shut up. Oh, my God.
It's a whole different look.
I like it.
She doesn't wear more hats, though.
Does your wife like it?
She loves it.
Really?
Yeah, that's her idea. Yeah, well, I had this baby as well, so I had a baby this year.
Shut up.
So it's a bunch of changes. Yeah.
And
the baby had came out of the womb with, like, all this hair. So much hair. And I was like, I can't look at all this hair and have my, like, terrible hair, so. Did it.
That's awesome. All right, dude. Well, you have a good night, and don't be a stranger.
You too, man.
All right, dude.
Thanks, dude. Talk to you later. Bye.
I want to thank Dinesh once again for joining me on the podcast. It was a pleasure catching up with him. He is always very, very genuine, so thank you again, Dinesh, for that. If you want to get in touch with me, of course, the best place is going to be on Twitter, at Geekmind. You can email nerdylegion@gmail.com. I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode, and I'll catch you then.